This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otipoti, Dunedin, and I am joined, still not from Whakatane, but from Otutahi Christchurch by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
Very good indeed. You are at the UN Adaption Futures Conference.
Yes, and got invited today to go to... what is the Solomon's in May, and you can come too, Sam.
That will be awesome. That will be fun.
Yeah.
What has blown your mind today?
I think just looking at, you know, like education's always the thing that interests me, and looking at the way other Indigenous nations are using education to alleviate climate anxiety. I'm super excited to start sharing what we're doing in Aotearoa with other nations.
It sounds good to me. Who are you sharing with us today?
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy. I get to share with you the very wonderful Francesca Jackson. Welcome, Francesca. Very wonderful to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Welcome, Francesca. Where are you?
Hi, how are you? I'm in Dunedin.
Oh, we could have been in the same room. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Dunedin.
This is going to be short then.
Born and raised here. I did leave after finishing high school, moved up to Auckland, and I joined the Navy out of high school, so I spent a few years up there, and also some time in Wellington before coming home.
What drove you to the Navy?
You know, when I left high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was just enjoying being, you know, finished with school. And my best friend was joining. It was her passion to join the Navy. And I thought, hey, that sounds good. So I also joined. And it was definitely a life-changing decision. And it was a good few, about 6 or 7 years I spent up there.
You must have liked it.
I guess I did. There were a lot of experiences, a lot of experiences, some travel and great friends. And it was a nice lifestyle for someone in their early 20s, I'd say.
And we're going to talk later on about what works for you in terms of a definition of sustainability. But was that a thing in the Navy?
No. Short answer, no, not that I can remember.
That was a quick answer then. So what did you do after the Navy?
So after the Navy, I had already started my degree through the Navy. But when I came home, I finished off my bachelor's degree down here at Otago. And part of that included a student exchange over to Italy. I spent a semester studying at Bocconi University, which was also a very cool experience, and probably also the last the last reassuring thing to tell me that the place I really wanted to be was home in Dunedin. So I did come back home after that and graduated here. And I have been pretty much working at the University of Otago since then. So almost 19 years now I've been working at the university.
What do you do there?
I spent probably around 10 years in international admissions. That was the first thing that I spent the most amount of time in. And after I'd spent about quite a long time, I think the average back then was admissions staff averaged about 2.5 years was how long people stayed in the role. So 10 years was a really long time. And it meant that I had learned an awful lot about the way international admissions worked across different universities. And I was very keen to sort of take that further. So I moved into project work in the first instance as a subject matter expert for international admissions. And it just kind of went from there. So at the moment, I'm a process improvement manager. And so I work with areas around the university to improve the way they're doing things and just make better use of the resources and tools that are available to them.
I bet you that people go, oh, goody, the process improvement people are coming.
I'm not sure if that's what they say. But they're always pleased once we've been.
I'm sure they are. So you're doing a Masters of Sustainable Business. How did that come about?
It is actually my second crack at doing a Masters. I started a Masters of Applied Management, let's see, it was probably 7-8 years ago. And it was when my children were a little bit younger, and I think it just felt like it was a bit too much for me at the time. It was also an online one through another university. So I paused that and thought that I would just come back to that in another time. It was the Master of Sustainability, of Sustainable Business, was probably my preferred choice, but 7 or 8 years ago, it wasn't available online. So when I saw that it was becoming available that way, that was pretty exciting to me. So I think it just kind of worked out for the best that I did have that little pause. And so last year signed up for the Master of Sustainable Business.
So why sustainable and why business?
I think that because I work in continuous improvement and process improvement, I'm very much interested in what businesses can be doing to, I think when I thought a lot about sustainable business, it felt to me that this was so aligned with what I'm doing at the moment, because whether it's how we're using our resources or whether it's how we're delivering the service to the customers and making sure that we're meeting their needs, it is all about being sustainable and especially so into the future. So it was very aligned, and I'm very interested in the wider view of sustainable business in terms of looking at the environmental, economic and business factors across and how they kind of...
Let's take the first of your music choices, 660, Not Forgetting Their Roots. Yeah. Why this one?
Yeah. Well, it's from Dunedin. So I definitely like the local vibe. They're definitely one of my favourite bands, and I've enjoyed seeing them live a few times now. I think probably the same generic reason everyone would give for this particular one, it just really speaks to you about, you know, remembering where you came from. And it's probably, to be honest, some of the things I grappled with in the Navy is really sort of thinking about your values and your moral compass and things like that I've, you know, spent a lot of time thinking about. And I like anything that really draws us back to our family, our roots, our North Star, that sort of thing. So it definitely is a song that I enjoy.
Thank you.
his homeland. Boots laced tight, a ticket in his hand, never to return home again. So he lost what he knows and what all is right for. A broken world and a world of lies, but the days were numbered, relationships suffered. He lost the faith of all those who matter. So don't forget your roots and my friend. Don't forget your family, yeah. Don't forget your roots and my friend. The ones who made you, the ones who brought you here. Don't forget your roots and my friend. Don't forget your family, yeah. Don't forget your roots and my friend, yeah. Your family, yeah. Don't forget your roots, my friend. The ones who made you, the ones who brought you here. Don't forget your roots, my friend, yeah. Don't forget your family, yeah. Don't forget your roots, my friend, yeah. Oh. Your family, yeah. Don't forget your roots, my friend, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Francesca, everybody who we interview for this series, I've asked them the same question, which is about the people who have been your role models. Who have been your role models and what have they modeled for you?
I think the people that have been sort of most impactful for me have been people that I've been quite close with, whether it's been a boss or someone that I've worked with. I think anyone that really demonstrates authenticity and can stand up for themselves and be true to themselves, those are things that have been really important to me. And to see it in practice, you need to see people do it and to go, yep, I can do this too. Because sometimes those moments are challenging and it does take a bit of braveness to sort of stand up to what you really, what's true to you. And I think in terms of my role model, my biggest role model is hands down my mum. Love her. And I love that this, you know, that a lot of people would have that same feeling that it's their mums. I love that. When I was in the Navy, I did some leadership training and we had to do some, we had to write this essay and it was about leadership and it was a similar thing. We had to write this, an essay on somebody who we, you know, looked up to or who inspired us. And I wrote mine about my mum. Because I really just, you know, she has been such a, and again, I think this is the same with a lot of people, but she's been such a strong influence and I admire her so much. And she's definitely the first person I go to for advice. And I actually got marked down because I had, yeah, they thought I hadn't really taken it seriously or I hadn't sort of, for whatever reason. And I thought that's just not true. And it's 20 years later and I still say my biggest influence is my mum, and she's just the best role model. So I stand by it. I'll do it again.
Well, I would ask you to please send me the email address for that person who marked you down. I'd like to have words with them.
I know, right?
That's outrageous. authenticity, there are two things that have been real strong themes, especially in the online cohort. And I think probably because you guys are a little bit older and have been kind of out in the world a bit more. And but those are the two themes. Parents as being the amazing role models, actually across both groups, the in-person and the online, parents come up, Sam, over and over again. But that word authenticity, especially in your group. And so if we think about that, it's almost an unusual thing, which is how come it's raised. So how do we inspire that authenticity in people's professional practice space?
I think that it's a lot about creating that space for people to be honest and to be, you know, who they are and say what they say. I think that we can sometimes perhaps say that we have inclusive spaces, but we don't really mean it. And just saying it doesn't make it a thing. And so I think that's really important. And some of the things, you know, so my church has got, I'm a Christadelphian, and my church is going through a little bit of a, we're considering some questions have been raised, and the church is made up of a range of young and older people. And so there's this discussion that's coming up shortly, and what they're doing is, before we have the discussion, we're going to have a discussion of how to have a difficult discussion, right? And I think that's so important. I'm so proud that they're doing that. It is hard to have these conversations where someone can genuinely say what they think and feel and not be cut down, because we're so quick to do that. And as soon as we start to do that, people start putting a little bit of a persona over what they know is okay to say in this space. And so I think that's probably the most important thing, is to really be genuine when we say that we, you know, when you want to listen to a person's different point of view.
It's so funny that you should say that, because today I was at this conference that I'm at, and somebody asked me for some feedback about one part of it. And they were very clear that they wanted very honest feedback. And I gave them very honest feedback based on a lot of conversations that I'd had with other people. And it wasn't positive. I tried to be kind about it, mm-hmm. but it was real. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they didn't like it. Mm-hmm. So what they should have said is, do you have any positive feedback for me? I'm not interested in hearing anything that's not very positive about how great I am.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different thing that people ask for. So maybe sometimes it's also the question, isn't it? It's not just about the feedback or the engagement. It's about the question that you ask.
Yeah, I think so. And just being prepared for whatever the answer is, accepting of the answer.
It's funny. It's funny, and in this world of instant gratification, every time you want anything, it's all there. Sometimes it makes it difficult for people to engage in real. Yeah, I certainly have noticed that as well. Francesca, speaking of real, you had a wonderful, very real interview with your podcast person. Would you please let us know who you interviewed and why you chose them?
Yeah, I did. I interviewed a lovely lady called Jessica Triscott. She works at the University of Otago as well in the sustainability office. And her role is, she's the team leader of the engagement team. And I thought that would be quite an interesting conversation. I've heard her speak before in various different sort of forums. And I know she's so, so passionate about sustainability. So I knew that whatever we talked about would be interesting and great. So one of the things that I have looked at, have thought about a lot in the past, is around change and change management and how we introduce change to business. And I've been quite sort of shocked by the fact that when it comes to large changes in an organisation, something like 70% of them fail And I think that's just a shocking number. And so I've been interested in implementation of projects. That's something that that sort of interests me a lot. And so I was thinking, well, I wonder what this looks like in sustainability initiatives and changes that we're bringing into organisations, and really just how. I mean, it was sort of a broad conversation, but you know, how does the organisational structure or culture affect that? And just to have a chat about her experiences and reflections on introducing these initiatives. It was great. It was so interesting to hear her experiences.
Kia ora koutou and welcome to Inside Sustainability, exploring how organisations build strong, resilient futures. I'm your host, Francesca Jackson, and in this episode, we're looking at what it really takes to embed sustainability within an organisation. It's one thing to have strategies and goals, but another to make them a part of your everyday practice. A recent study that addresses this very challenge was undertaken by a group of researchers, Barina Jagenjak, Catherine Valovic Hansen, Henriette Lunder, and John A. Hunnis, in an article published last year called The Role of Organisational Culture and Structure in Implementing Sustainability Initiatives. Their findings suggest three key elements for success. First, building awareness and communicating a clear sustainability vision. Second, cultivating a green organisational culture. And third, taking a collaborative, inclusive approach. The authors argue that this three-pronged approach is vital not only for sustaining an organisation's competitive advantage, but also for achieving real environmental and social outcomes. At the University of Otago, the Sustainability Office has been leading important initiatives that show what's possible when sustainability is built into the heart of an institution. Today, I'm joined by Jessica Triscott from the Sustainability Office to talk about how her team is working with these ideas in practice, the successes, the challenges, and the lessons others can learn. So let's dive in. Welcome, Jess. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into sustainability, let's get to know you, Jess. One of my favourite questions to kick off with is, where do you feel most at home?
Home, it feels for me, my grandparents' house in Taupo. Yeah, that's where we always land, no matter where we are across the world. That's where we end up at Christmas time, and that's definitely where home will always feel, I think.
Oh, that's nice. I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Is there a moment that sparked your passion for sustainability?
That's a really good question. I think if I was to think about what made me care a lot about the environment, my mum's a kindergarten teacher, and so I had a very hands-on mum growing up. And I distinctly remember my dad likes to ride motorbikes, so we'd always go out to the bush and have like a big camp set up. Well, dad some loops and mum and I would play in the dirt, essentially. And one time she created kind of like this fairy house set up, and a couple of weeks later we went back and my dad must have gone back and muddled around with the fairy house, and it created this like awe and fascination when I saw my fairy house had been used by obviously fairies and it's
being lived in.
Yeah, it was one of those things that I think it made me start to like see magic and joy in nature in a really cheesy way, but it started kind of building these relationships and an emotional connection to a space that I feel like now I want to try and champion and kind of make sure everyone else gets to experience those magical moments out and about.
I love that. That's a great moment. How have your views on sustainability changed over time?
The more that I engage with people around sustainability, the more I have found that I have peace of mind that I don't have to do it all, that's okay if there's certain things about sustainability that I care about and other things that don't light the fire in my belly, because there's so many people who care and so many people who are specializing or activating themselves in different spaces. So I might care a lot about the environment And I care a lot about fast fashion, and I care a lot about a lot of social sustainability stuff. And within my team here, we have Craig, who cares a whole lot about our carbon target to be net zero carbon by 2030 and that kind of mahi. So I think I've found a lot of peace in not feeling like I have to solve it all and handle it all and be a champion for it all.
It must be quite uplifting working with other people in the same space.
Yes, because we talk a lot about kind of being in our own little waka, and that very much is a privilege, and we totally recognize that, because I think I forget that there are people out and about that don't have the same mindset, because we're really lucky that we all kind of agree with each other on most things and have the same end goal and all care and are passionate and want to see things happen. So I definitely think that in our little waka here at Toi Toi Te Reo, we're quite lucky, because it does help motivate one another. But also I recognize that that's not the reality for a lot of people in other spaces who might be delivering the kind of work that we are.
What does embedding sustainability mean to you in the context of Otago?
One thing I've learned more than anything while working at the University of Otago is we're not a cookie cutter uni. A lot of the projects and things like that that we've seen work really well elsewhere just hasn't been picked up in the way that evidence has shown in other universities. A key example that I can think about is Green Impact was a program that was designed to champion staff and PhD students and even residential colleges to deliver change on campus. And the program worked really well in Australia. It was working really well in some other universities in New Zealand. And when we launched it, it just was not working. And because it was very much a online platform, it was probably a little bit more targeted to, hey, do this additional workload. And I think that was probably what made it feel hard. And so I think when we've looked at a program, like a staff engagement program like Green Impact, it's evolved then to Green Racine, which is when we kind of took it offline, created tangible actions that were either quick wins, project-based, so people had really cool ideas and they just wanted to do a project in their space, or connecting people to the right processes and systems across the university that help them make more sustainable choices, but it's not an additional workload. It's just changing how you do things.
I'm interested when you say the quick wins, I'm interested what they are, and also did that help build momentum?
So quick wins literally just included things like putting up bin prompts. So you've got method bins now, help put up signage that explains what goes in what bin. And we did actually have a lot of pushback around some of those, like what feels like tick boxy tasks, because people were like, this isn't creating anything. What it was doing was it was helping them tick off an action for starters. So they've got a tick on their booklet now, like woohoo, that's motivation. It was creating conversation because they were having to put them up and be like, well, what is this about? I'll help people know a little bit more about it once they're being put up. It was creating awareness and a bit of a sense of community, because you saw posters up in your space, you'd then go into another meeting room and see somebody else who's put up posters around the same bin. So it was kind of trying to tell the narrative that it's not the one-off action, it's the collective impact of those actions. You plus 80 other teams that had been registered putting up those posters and promoting better bin sorting and less contamination actually has a huge impact.
Well, we definitely see the bins all over campus, and they're being used.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So that's a big one. What are some of the initiatives or achievements that you're most proud of so far?
I am very, very proud of Te Oraka. So that translates to the good space. We're essentially a campus thrift shop, which is totally student run, and we're completely circular. So everything within our thrift shop is curated clothing. So it's been sorted through by students, selected by students, hung by students, priced by students, and nothing's over $20. So students can access some really quality items for an affordable price. Yeah, we have eco store refills. We have pre-loved bikes. We have e-rescue items, and everything that's made within the store goes back into the space to support students' experience with sustainability. So we have five students that work for Teodaka, and they are all paid living wage through Teodaka.
Oh, that's great.
We're able to pay student workshop facilitators and pay them for their time. We're able to pay student musicians for their music and their time. We're able to feed students, and we're able to ensure that the events and initiatives that we do run through the space are affordable and accessible for all students. So yeah, it's a project that I'm really proud of, and it also won the International Green Gown Award for Student Engagement a couple of years ago. So I guess, thank you. So I guess other people are also recognising that we should be proud of it too as a space. So yeah, it's really special. And I think as well, it's great critique to have students so on board with what we do and using the keywords as part of their experience as the keywords we used when we were first discussing what we thought the space could be. Should look, and students still using those keywords throughout, so that's really special.
Yeah. And so one of the things we also talked about earlier was the thing that makes a university different to other organizations is the student cohort. And you're clearly doing so much with the students, and they're sounds like they're loving it. Do you learn things from the way you engage with the students that you're able to use with staff also, that gives you ideas of what does work or what doesn't?
I think the key takeaway is that I definitely know when I first started my role, I was like, everything that goes to staff is serious and everything that we do as students is fun and free. And forgetting, like, even though you're an adult, you still like to have fun and you still want to have a free sausage sizzle or a free veggie dumpling. So trying to reflect on what works and what we create intentionally in terms of space for students, and why aren't we replicating that for staff? So I think, yeah, definitely leaning into the idea that we are really, really good at creating spaces for students, and maybe taking some of those key learnings and delivering those spaces for staff as well, because we all like to have fun and enjoy wholesome things that feel intentional for us, especially with like well-being and sustainability at Frontmind.
Whether it's with staff or students, what are some of the ongoing challenges or areas that still need more work with embedding these initiatives?
I definitely think, I think one of the biggest issues that we're up against is the buzzword of sustainability. Yeah. I think as soon as people hear it, they've already made their mind up. Part of my role as an engagement coordinator before I had this role, I was very much aware that we were well educated in environmental sustainability. Like, it's our energy, it's our waste, it's our carbon footprint. Nobody really was talking about social sustainability. Like, how are we talking about equity and inclusion and diversity? And so I hosted a drag show on campus to try and promote the SDGs that were more social leaning. And I'm actually really surprised I didn't get fired, because there was a lot of clothing was removed during that drag show. But even after that, I remember going and doing a few presentations to staff, and the common questions after kind of delivering these key learnings about social sustainability and what we were doing and those sort of things still came back to, I'm struggling with my recycling, or if I turn off every, if I take out every second light bulb, will that reduce my energy consumption in my office? And so I think the biggest issue, and we're well aware of it, is knowledge gaps and understanding that we still have a lot to do in terms of educating people on climate literacy and understanding these words that we're using, and it's not just this big buzzword of sustainability and climate change being a myth and all these sort of like yuck narratives that are associated with it. We're also, as a society, seeing a lot of greenwashing. So there's a lot of distrust associated with sustainability. And I think the more that we're able to just kind of create spaces where it's fun and engaging, and students are able to kind of just absorb things and feel comfortable with what they're dealing with and what they're talking about to others, the more that we'll see sustainability ready to be embedded within teams and students.
We've talked about how the language can be a barrier that you're looking to overcome. What other ways do you bring staff and students along with you in making sustainability part of everyday life on campus?
One of our favorite ways to engage with students and sustainability is sustainability by stealth.
Yeah, right.
we don't really front that what we're doing is a sustainable thing. For example, some of the key events on our event calendar this year was a boiler room. So we had a DJ in here, turned off all the lights, had some music blasting, had a pizza truck out the front and just got people in to try and show them that Teodaka is a space and where it is. We did it in a collaboration with Radio One. So I guess initially you'd probably think, what the heck does sustainability and Radio One have in common? And yeah, a lot. The kaupapas are the same. We care about students. We want everyone to have a good time and we care about Papatūānuku. So it was really cool to kind of reach through Radio One's audience and showcase Teodaka as a space that is for everybody and can be enjoyed. We also do night markets, so it's just basically all intentionally curated. So we have pre-loved clothing, jewelry that's made from repurposed jewelry from op shops. There's one chicky who crochets with all waste products that's come through. Yeah. And so they come to a night market, they have a really good time, and all the items that they've been showcased are all really good waste minimization. So it not being the front narrative as to why they should show up, but while they're here, they're celebrated for choosing to show up because that's what the event is about. Mm-hmm. And I know that Ray and Craig have a lot more touch points with stuff and they've probably figured out their own ways to nail that. But it's cool to have those conversations because I know people always say it's not problems, it's opportunities, but it really is in this case. Yeah. Us to be able to figure out where we can be playful enough to try and engage staff with this journey, because I think Te Kuka as a framework is, I might be biased, but I think it's a really, really beautiful document and I think it has a lot of potential, and I think seeing that executed well will create a whole different experience for students and staff being here at the University of Otago.
I love the scope of what you do. It's phenomenal. I love how varied it is and how thoughtful you are with some of those initiatives. It's amazing. And I can see that, your momentum.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, last week we just celebrated 10,000 students through the door this year.
Wow.
Yeah, and I remember somebody saying to me, you know, like, man, a pro doesn't feel like that much. And I was like, well, actually reflecting, it does.
Yeah.
Like, we're all pretty proud of that. Yeah. And maybe not taking the time to be like, wow, we did that. But I think if you ask any of our Te Kura during the last couple of weeks, has it felt like that, they probably would answer yes. I think that's probably something that we could even just do better, is taking that time to really be proud of ourselves for what we are doing. So yeah, something to be proud of, definitely.
You've come a long way, and I can't wait to see where the next 5-10 years takes you.
I'm definitely at that age where people keep asking me, what's your 5-year plan? And I'm like, I don't know.
What really stands out to me is that it's not just a straightforward path from point A to B. You've tried so many different things. You've reflected on what's worked and what hasn't worked and built up that culture along the way.
Mm-hmm.
While there are challenges, as you say, not roadblocks, they're opportunities to keep learning and improving. Jess, one final question to wrap things up. If you were in charge of the world for a day, what would you do?
I love this question because I already know what it would be. And I would hope that people would be like, this works really well, so we're going to stick with this. Is any product design, if I'm Coca-Cola and I've decided I'm going to make a blue Coke, I have to prove that there is an environmental consideration to the design of that product. I have to prove that if I'm putting it in a plastic bottle, that I have a way to dispose of that plastic bottle. I have a end of line consideration, and I have to meet certain environmental requirements, because why people can just keep creating on this planet where we're already so overrun is beyond me. And I'd love to see some laws or some changes around the reason behind why we should be continuing to create when there's already so much here on the planet. We've just got so much stuff. And so I think that would be something that would be really cool to try and see implement. That's something I would definitely do if I got the power stick for the day.
That's great. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Jess, thank you so much for sharing your time, experience and insights today. The message I'm taking away is that embedding sustainability is an ongoing journey. And when organisations create the right structures and culture, real change becomes possible. Thanks for listening, and I hope this conversation has given you some fresh ideas about how sustainability can be integrated more deeply into organisations of all kinds. Ka kite ana.
Thank you.
Francesca, that was a really great podcast, as I knew that it was going to be as soon as I heard the topic. Can you tell me, what was your big takeaway from it?
I really liked that Jess thought about, she talked about how it can feel overwhelming. And I think that this is probably something also that young people feel with the amount of challenge and sustainability. And that one of her sort of turning points was when she realized that she didn't have to do it all on her own. And I think that that was quite an important thing for us to recognize, because so many of these things that we're these changes in the world, they are so big and overwhelming. But we don't have to do the whole thing ourselves. And I think that that's really a reassuring thing to know, and also to have that feeling of all the people beside you, you know, in your community trying to do the same thing, and how that collectively has such a big impact.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Francesca Jackson, who's doing the Masters of Sustainable Business. Are you writing a thesis?
I am doing a project, a research project.
What's it on?
And I'm going to look at, I'm actually looking at the principles of degrowth in the university setting. And it's really just quite an exploratory piece on, I guess, when we sort of look at some of the strategic direction of the university and universities and a lot of universities now have their sustainability strategic directions as well, and just sort of thinking about how those overlap, where they overlap in alignment, and where there can be a little bit of conflict, and what that might look like when we sort of look at degrowth, where we might be going in the next 10, 20 years.
Despite what it might pretend to be, the university's a big business and talks business measures and things. How do you put that kind of concept into business speak?
I think when we started talking about this project, one of the things that my supervisor did raise was the use of language when we're talking about sustainability, and the fact that people have different perspectives on what that means. So I think it's a really good question around how you phrase the things and how you discuss the topic. I think that's something that will actually come out through the project, that we spend some time comparing and thinking about what people actually meant by particular words, phrases, and goals that are in those strategic directions. And that may be something that we sort of find complements each other between our you know, more core strategic direction and the sustainability ones, versus where there might be a little bit more thought that needs to be had.
Because there might be a clash of values and mindsets, but also the tools that you might want to put in place. If you're focused on metrics and KPIs and those sorts of things, does that play nicely with the intangible values, the intergenerational change? How do you frame that in a process improvement way?
Yeah, so I think KPIs themselves are pretty easy to get wrong. And I think that exactly that, I think aligning it with the future, the more thinking out 10, 20, 30, 100 years, where we want to be, that we get, it gives us a better a better framing of what we're trying to achieve, which then gets, because whether it's a KPI or a, you know, an outcome, it's I think that if we don't do that, if we don't have those conversations, then any KPI that we pick but can easily be a little misguided. So I think it's really useful, a useful exercise.
Yeah, we've been, Mawira and I and others have been writing for years about moving beyond efficiency and optimization to regenerative thriving. But I think maybe that what you've given me the clue to is that what we need to be doing is to be describing that in the language that's still going to work.
Yeah. So I talk a lot about effective and efficient processes and what that means. It's something we definitely see through our strategic direction. And I think in a generic way, probably most organisations have it about how they strive to have effective and efficient processes. And without sort of looking at what, first of all, what that means, they're obviously two different words and they have two different meanings, what we're trying to achieve there. But what that looks like in the organisation itself and how you know when you're achieving it. And I think that, I think because it does sort of, it is about lean thinking and running a lean business. But to me, this is what a sustainable business is. It's, you know, having, being able to focus the processes. And what I try to tell people is the processes that can be most streamlined, making those most effective and efficient so that the value add and the people's extra time can be put into places where you really do need to have more of a bespoke approach or, you know, more of an advisory kind of input there.
And sometimes lean doesn't equal sustainable. And, you know, the as we discovered with the, well, the earthquakes and various other things, that the milk that's in Dunedin that we buy gets driven through Dunedin up to Christchurch and back again. But it might be lean in terms of a lean production system, but doesn't seem very sustainable to me.
No. No, and this is the thing, when we, you know, if the KPI was, you know, I see sort of a similar thing with contact centres where a KPI might be to, you know, have quite a short response time to the person, but that doesn't really, it's not the whole story. And that's what I think that we can miss with those KPIs, and same with looking for a lean process for delivering that milk, is that you do, if you're not looking at it holistically, then I do think you can focus on the wrong thing. And so that's when we look at the lean thinking with the economic benefit, or whether it's environmental and social, they are so important to bring together for a sustainable business. And I just think that we're at such an exciting time to do that, you know, with the, you know, a lot more interest in sustainability, a lot more interest in tools with AI. And there's just a lot more, I guess there's a lot more room for creative, innovative thinking that, and as long as we keep, you know, these three threads in our mind and not just focusing on one like the economic, I think it's just such an exciting time.
In terms of exciting time, you've got a vice chancellor that brought in the wellbeing budget, and that's exactly aligned with what does wellbeing mean in a planetary and community sense. What does that do to the measures of quality in terms of process improvement? So instead of it being directly about products and services, it changes the perspective, and I think you've got support from on top at the moment. Awesome. I have got some questions to end the show, and actually negative time to do it, so I'm going to get you to do really short answers. What's the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Starting this Masters of Sustainable Business, I felt really, when I started my first paper, I was just nervous to see that I could do it again after my first false start. So I'm really proud to be coming to the end of it.
What's your superpower?
being a mum.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Oh, gosh. I'm not sure that I would use that word. I'm opinionated, and I'm sure of my values, and I would definitely stand up for those.
What motivates you?
I think that you'll say that I'm in the right job. Change, improvement. That just gets me excited. I love making things better for people. And just being up to, I love challenges too. I love anything that's been a problem around the university for a long time, and you hear it be a problem for a long time. I love tackling those challenges and getting a good result.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Enroll in the Master of Sustainable Business. It's life-changing. Every single paper. I've got something so important out of every single paper. I've loved it.
Good stuff. Mawira.
Francesca, last night was the last night for our group as we finished our 12 weeks together. And I swear to you, I finished those and I cry because I feel so sad. And it's people like you and all the goodness that you bring to the world and all the goodness that you bring to that classroom space that just make it so hard to say goodbye at the end of a semester. Thank you for always bringing yourself to our time together. Thank you for your authentic practice. Kia ora.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Thank you
and
for that.
And back to you.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to go out to your second music choice, Jack Johnson, Better Together.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least for most of the questions in my heart, like why are we here and where do we go, and knock on me so hard. It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Just might find their way into my dreams tonight, but I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow night you see that they'll be gone too. Too many things I have to do, but if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between, with only two, just me and you. Not so many things we got to do, or places we got to be. We'll sit beneath the mango tree now. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. We're somewhere in between together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We were joined today by Francesca Jackson, who brought her contribution for Coming Up for Air, which was Jess Triscott from the University of Otago Sustainability Office, talking about strong, resilient futures. with Moira Karatai. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ma te wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.